Welcome to Tunnel Talk, a No Facts, All Feelings Wrestling Podcast on the Social Suplex Network. I'm Leah.
I'm Ann.
And Allie is at the rodeo right now, so I have written here, light banter.
You did so good on that intro. You did a real Allie, welcome to Tunnel Talk attack, which I loved.
And again, I think this is my third time having to host, and every single time, the thing that I have stress dreams about the week leading up is that I'm going to say all facts, no feelings, and then we'll be on the hook for that.
We'll have to
rethink the model.
We can't disappoint, like, you can't have false advertising. And it's so important that everyone know that there will be no facts going in.
Whatever we say up front, we're held to.
Yes. Yeah. And we can't re-record things. I think you'll see if you listen back to the tapes.
That would be the most us thing ever. If someone was like, you know, you can't, when you say, hey, Marjorie, cut that, you know, she can, right? And we're like, Right. Oh, shit.
Oh, my God.
Here we didn't know that was legal.
Yeah. You guys will never hear the problematic stuff we've actually cut, so think about that.
And I got to go to AEW this week.
You did. I know. I was so excited for you.
It was pretty huge.
How was the show?
Let me ask you this. I was mega pumped, excited, because, like, I felt like it was pretty obvious that Mercedes was coming. Yeah. And also, like, I think the vibes have just been really good lately, and it seemed like it was going to be a good show. But then a lot of the discourse was like, nobody cared. They should have said Mercedes was coming explicitly. Now, did you feel that Mercedes was coming? Did you feel excited?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of assume that Boston isn't actually spelled with two money signs. So, yeah, but I also feel like I'm probably, like, the opposite of the person that you're trying to get with that advertising thing, because it's like, because I'm a person who, unfortunately, is online reading about wrestling all day, every day, and some people probably have a more balanced relationship to their life, and they aren't.
Are you saying that we are no longer the casual fan?
I would say once we created a wrestling podcast, we'd perhaps moved out of casual fan range. And then also, like, I don't actually, like, I have followed Mercedes Moné's path out of WWE for the past 2 years via the internet wrestling community, but I haven't ever actually watched a match of hers. Like, right. I think I watched her New Japan, at least the entrances. I don't know if I watched that match, but otherwise it's like, so I don't know her. And I'm not a casual fan. So, but I feel like advertising, you would want to get people who, like, watch WWE, like, while they're falling asleep, and they enjoyed her there. And so they might not have known. Right. But also, like, I don't know. A lot of the discourse has been like, they should have advertised this. And I'm like, I'm uncertain why I should care. You know?
Again, I don't work there.
It's like, and, like, the crowd was great. It sounded amazing. And the building seemed full. So it's like, maybe the ratings could have been higher. But, like, I don't care. It's not my company.
It's not my company. So, it's not my money. It's not my son who's blowing all this. I felt like the crowd was really, really excited. On the street, making our way in, it seemed very buzzy. And then, like, I have to tell you, this was the best section that I've ever sat in. Everybody around us was a hoot and a half. First of all,
it was all people who waited for the hard cam and possibly comps they put on the hard cam side.
Yeah, I think that probably is right. I don't think the two different people I'm about to single out, I don't think were comps, but I think that's probably right, that it's people who knew to look for the hard cam side, so they probably were not
class
casual.
Of fan. That's where you guys always sit, so that's a little suck-up comment for you and Sarah.
Sarah said on her podcast that she was waiting for the hard cam side, and so when the hard cam finally got released, not only was she tracking it, but she got tagged a couple times by people being like, FYI! So I was like, I'm so glad, because I was a useless part of that.
It's important in friendship for each of you to have a role, I think.
So true. So true. Mm. But anyway, so there was two girls behind us, no man in sight, unaccompanied women.
Love that.
And so we're sitting there.
So rare to find other unaccompanied women at shows.
I know it. And Sarah and I are sitting there. The girl behind us, the girl behind Sarah was, like, I think was the real fan. And she had brought her friend who either was a lapsed fan fan or just an amiable friend because she was explaining some of the particulars. Like, she was explaining Brandon and Colt Cabana. And, like, she was like, well, they used to have a YouTube show and he used to film it. Like, it was just very funny. And so we're listening and enjoying it. And finally, Sarah can't take it anymore. She turns around and she's like, it is such a joy to be around another set of women who aren't, like, who aren't with a man or, you know, aren't here because of a man. And so they respond instantly. And so we're going back and forth. They're lighting up. They're telling, you know, it was just extremely joyful. Apparently, one of the women said that her ex-boyfriend got her into it. Mm-hmm. And that when they broke up, she stopped watching. And then she was like, wait a minute. No, but I did like it. So then she just started watching again.
Oh, nice. Like, that's
that is nice. Nice. That is
he
nice.
Can't take that from me. Yeah.
And then the other thing that was extremely funny later, these girls are going to come up in later. So remember them because I have to relay another very funny moment what they had. But in front of us was two guys. And so very cool stardom girl did a dark match. I don't really know anything about her except that she was very cool and her match fucking rocked. It was against Anna Jay. And I think it was a big deal that she was there. But the two guys in front of us were whispering furiously. And Sarah loudly says to me, like, this is a cool stardom person. And so they turn around instantly and is like, wait, but like, stardom doesn't work with AEW. And she like leaned in and was like, well, Rossi's gone. And so like, they're...
But yeah, we're casual fans for sure, yeah.
Immediately, these two guys are peppering her with questions. Oh, she's leaning forward. She's explaining to him. They're going back and forth and back and forth. And, like, they're soaking it up. It's so interesting. And I'm like, of course Sarah would have get clocked immediately as knowing things about stardom.
That's fantastic. Just
I loved it.
The fact of men listening to a woman they don't know at a wrestling show tell them stuff about wrestling, that's the most charming thing I've ever heard in my life.
Absolutely. And they were very, very eager for the knowledge. Like, they were not weirdos at all. Like, they were, like, very, like, thrilled that they were like, oh, can you explain this? And it was, it was very good. It was
America's healing. That's great to hear. What a good section. Boy.
I have been lucky enough to go to a lot of shows, and I think, like, obviously our first All Out that we went to together was huge just because it was, like, the first time we ever went to a show, and, like, we were all together, and that was cool, and then, like, things like Blood and Guts was cool, but, like, I think this was the most fun I've ever had with a crowd, if that makes sense. Like, it was just, like, a wildly boisterous atmosphere. Yeah. And I just had such a nice night. Also, I was pretty drunk, so that'll do.
I mean, the crowd sounded so hot on TV. It was wild. And it really does give a lot of energy to the show. And it's so much more fun when you're in person, when people are going crazy. So those big debuts, I mean, it is like Bryan Danielson, everyone losing it.
It's so infectious, you know, like somebody comes. I mean, even when the stardom girl came out and people started losing it, I was like so happy to see her. Do I know why she was important? No, but I was like, oh, this is a big deal. And I'm paying attention.
As a society, we really don't have enough like community emotion events, you know, because it really can like.
I agree.
You wouldn't think just being around other people having an emotion give you that emotion, but it turns out it sure does. So.
And wrestling teaches you about community.
That's, that's true. The pros and the cons.
So let's get into it. So Big Business, the show actually opened with Mercedes. It started with Renee doing a little, opener of just to place us all in Boston, and then all of a sudden the music hit. It was not the same music that she used in New Japan, so there was a very funny moment. I don't know if this happened on TV too, but it was like fully 5 seconds of just music with no name on the Titatron. So the crowd was like, I think that this is Mercedes, but I'm not sure. What are we doing?
By the power of elimination. It's like, it'd be really funny though if like in Helico or someone walked out, you know, like just like someone who you haven't seen in a while. It's like, oh, that was their music. Yeah.
Right. That was exactly it, where it was like, oh, I think this is right. They wouldn't be so mean as to be like, and Pac has new music.
Right.
But no, it was in fact Mercedes Moné, the former Sasha Banks from WWE. She came out of the good boy hole. She looked cool as hell.
Like, she looked so cool.
She was covered in sequins and like gold chains. That costume rocked.
Yeah, I thought it looked so good with the white too, and just I don't know, the way it was cut out and stuff looked great.
And she danced her way out there, and she was dancing in the rain. She just looked so cheerful and happy. I think she had a pretty good vibe.
Yeah, I really liked her vibe. It was, just seeming happy to be here really goes a long way with me. So, although everyone, when they debut, mostly seems happy to be there. So we'll see.
We'll see how it goes.
Eyes on you. But, yeah, no, I thought she had a great energy. It was a lot of fun with the, the dancing was really great.
She looked very sweet. She seemed nice. And so she gave a whole long promo. She kind of, just covered a lot of the beats you'd expect her to cover of like, I was gone, but now I'm back and I'm wrestling again and blah, blah, blah. She brought up a bunch of pretty local places. I think this was this one, right? Did he brought up the wrestling school that she...
Oh, yeah.
In North Andover? Yeah. And so people popped for North Andover, which has happened before. And then she brought up Willow. So she and Willow fought in New Japan last year, and Willow beat her for the New Japan Strong Women's title. And so she kind of announced that Willow and Rio would be the main event, which I wasn't expecting, and immediately popped for. Yeah. But the crowd definitely booed for Willow. But I have to say it was in this way. I was like,
what is happening here?
I cannot express the way the crowd was like hanging on her. Like everyone around me was like, if she tells us to commit ritual suicide right now, we will. Like, if she tells us to boo the Red Sox, we'll do it. Like, absolutely not a problem. So, like, she could have wielded that energy against anybody. But poor Willow got it. So she announced that would be the main event and that she and Willow had unfinished business, which made it seem like maybe Willow would be her first feud, which I was like, well, that's cool. That's definitely cool. And then during the show, there was a video package hyping both Rio and Willow as major forces in the women's division. I thought that video package was really well done, too. Like, all of a sudden, I was like, yeah, they are very cool.
It was very cool. Between, like, that and then the women getting the main event, I was very like, Mercedes Moné, you're really doing a lot for the women around here, which I really appreciate. It's a real rising tide lifting all boats, but, like,
As a punk recently said, right?
I believe he did. A rising something. Yeah.
It was followed by a backstage segment where Mercedes introduced herself to Rio and wished her good luck, continuing the implication that she was going to go after Willow. But in the main event, Riho and Willow ended up having a clean fight, no Stokely or any shenanigans. Willow got the pin. Willow and Riho hugged, which was very, very sweet. And then the lights went out, and she got attacked by Sky Blue and Julia Hart. They were beating her ass, and it looked bad. And it was like, okay, like, I know that I saw Stokely and Chris come out, and they did explain that later, but, like, I was like, where the fuck is Chris? But Mercedes' music hit, and she comes out for the save. She beat the shit out of Julia Hart. She pulled that whatever. I know I should know what that move was called when you hold a woman on your back, but it still looks very, very cool. And then after she cleared the ring, Willow thanked her for the save. Mercedes smiled at her very sweetly, and then they posed with their arms raised. So let's start with the promo. So I think you and I both clocked that it was pretty close to the first dance promo.
Yeah, it was very she didn't say much of substance, which like is fine really, but it was a very like punk, and not just first dance, but actually punk had like 10 of these promos over the course of his first few months, where it's like you come out for a while, the crowd cheers you, you enjoy their cheering, you kind of vamp for 10 minutes, nothing really happens. So it was a very like punk celebration promo, which I think I didn't mind from punk the first few times. It got old, like a month in or whatever. After the punk situation, because he turned out to be such a nightmare, it gives you much more of a visceral like, oh no, feeling. But I do feel like it's very cool for them to be treating a women's star like a huge deal. Like, she is a huge deal, especially a black women's star. And it's like, if Punk gets to do it, like, she should get to do it at least one time. You know, right. That's equality.
Right.
If she actually should get to do it for 6 months, that's equity. So.
No, I agree. And the other thing about this is that I think what was so frustrating, a lot of this ended up being frustrating in retrospect because I don't think we realized it was happening at the time. But, like, Punk came in and was like, I'm here now. Don't worry about it. I'll fix everything. And then he went around, like, changing things that weren't broken and then actually made it worse. But Mercedes is kind of coming in and being like, don't worry, folks. Like, I'll fix everything. But it's like, our house has holes in it. Like,
right. The women's division needs to be fixed. Right. Yeah. And it, like, honestly, because Saraya came in saying stuff like that, and it was very off-putting at the time. But, like, with her, like, with Mercedes Moné, I'm taking it more seriously because, like, the women's division the past few months, presumably since she signed as part of her deal, like, it has been so much better. So it seems like the money is where the mouth is.
Right. I think the thing with Saraya was that she came in and was like, everything you've done up until now is bullshit. Yeah. I hate it, but don't worry. I'm here now.
Yeah.
Mercedes hasn't, like, denigrated anything. No, she's just, she's right. Like, if anything, she's denigrating Tony because she's like, you could have done this all along, but if you need me to tell you, you're going to do that.
That is actually the frustrating thing about it because, like, the past few months have been better. And it's like, so Tony, it turns out with, like, just a modicum of attention placed on the women's division, you actually could have been doing, like, decent segments and storylines this whole time because actually I want to say the cast, which is not what I mean. The roster is the same at this point.
Right. My God. Right. So, yeah.
And she came in very, like, Riho and Willow are cool. And then I think it was nice to have her, like, ally with Willow at the end, too, because it's like, well, or whatever she's doing. But it's like, we've got a lot of dynamics with existing people happening, which I think they've done a pretty good job with so far with all the big debuts of having, like, how do they fit in with what's already happening here? Right. And who are they going to be pretty quickly, which I appreciate.
Right. Because that's what we said about Ospreay, too, is that Ospreay got to come in. He got to have the cheers. He did a little bit of, like, this is who I am. And then Don Callis came out. So I think if she hadn't had the thing at the very end, I don't think it would have been, like, exactly what I wanted, but the thing at the end is what I wanted. Like, for her to be like, okay, who am I allying with? So, like, if her and Willow do, like, a respect thing, that's, like, I think that's a perfectly fine, like, first thing, especially if it ends up feeding into whatever the hell is going on with Stokely. Like,
it'll be interesting because it has made me think, like, are they gonna, I think it would be a crazy mistake to turn Willow heel, but it is a little bit like, if there's tension with Mercedes and Willow and Mercedes is going to be a baby face and, like, Willow has this whole Stokely thing happening, like, is this feud going to end with Willow going heel? I don't know.
Well, what I thought, so when Willow got booed in the very beginning, I was like, oh, they're going to have to turn Willow heel. But actually, if one of the things they could do is turn Chris heel, because if Mercedes and Willow have a respect match and then, like, get, like, having a, like, a friendship / alliance, and Stokely gets in Chris's ear and is like, oh, Willow has turned her back on you for Mercedes, they could turn Chris heel and make Chris Mercedes's first, like, real feud. Which I think that match would kind of slap.
Yeah. I feel like there's potential for so many fun matches with different people that I think would be a lot of fun. And and it's interesting that Mercedes Moné also came in immediately interacting with people who are more around the TBS title than the world title too, which is
fascinating because commentary seemed like constantly to be like, you know, Willow's going for the, like, Willow. They seem to be framing it as, like, Willow's going to go for the title. And so I wonder if Willow is going to take it off Julia and where Mercedes is going to fall into that. Because, like, I don't know. Like, it's just very interesting because there's no way that Mercedes is going to try to challenge for the TBS title as her first go round. But if she helps Willow get it, and that kind of cements their, like, friendship.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. could be very interesting. I just, it's not what I expected them to do, and I like it better because I just assumed it would be like straight Tony, like straight to Tony.
Yeah, right. I know. Yeah, I like giving her more of like a run up or something else to do that's not straight at the world title, because I do think it'd be better for us to get to know her before she gets involved in that. And then, I don't, yeah, her and Willow together are really fun, and Chris too. It's just like, yeah.
She certainly, you know, made me eager to be like, well, I do want to see what else she gets up to. So hit me with her rating. Where are you booking her? Where are you putting
New
her?
New woman rating. Probably like at an 8 at this point.
I'm
like,
also at an 8. I thought that was I thought it was a great debut, and I'm really interested.
Yeah, I feel like she can definitely get me more as I get to know her personality more. Yeah. But I'm pretty psyched. Yeah, I was pretty pleased with her at this point. So, yeah, it's nice to feel like excited about the women's division. Like, we're talking about the women up front here, which is crazy.
I know.
Already elevating things.
So let's check in on what Tony's been up to since we mentioned her. On Collision this week, Mariah May, still dressed as Tony, fought Trisha Dora. And then after the match, Tony presented Mariah with the first ever Tony with an Eye award. Deonna tried to break it up, and Tony and Mariah beat her ass. This week, Deonna challenged the two of them to a tag match with a mystery partner. I did not realize this feud was going to keep going. I don't know for what.
I was so surprised. I was like, oh, are we still doing this? And yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, it's like, I guess they still do have things they could do together, like a great match would be amazing, I guess.
But be nice to have them redo it. Like, I'm open to them. If they do a rematch and it rules this time, easily I will forgive them and be like, of course this is the match that counts. But they can't give me another snoozer.
No. Well, and I feel like there's not really anywhere else to go with the feud. I mean, maybe there is. Like, I'd love for them to find some new things to say to and about each other, but they didn't really this week. I didn't feel like.
And I don't have hopes because now I know who the mystery partner is, who it was on Rampage.
Right.
Why don't you? You're dogging. Take a wild guess about who you think it might be.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Oh, no. Who is it?
It's Thunder Rosa.
Oh, okay.
See, where it's like, I mean, the match is probably going to be good. I actually like Thunder Rosa's
I'm sure it will be.
Like, wrestling, but it's like, when has Thunder Rosa like in added to a feud, really? Like, I feel bad being like mean to her because like, I don't know. I'm like, we're mean to men. We're not mean to women.
Right,
but, like,
exactly.
But I'm like, Thunder Rosa is not, like, if I'm feeling like down on a feud, Thunder Rosa is not really gonna juice it up. But
no, and it's like she and Britt had the like amazing lights out match, but it's like I don't remember anything about the feud leading up to it particularly.
But I mean, if the problem last time was the wrestling, then maybe this will make it better, because Thunder Rosa can wrestle, you know.
Sure. Yeah, and I don't mind, you know, a tag match between those four, for sure.
I just don't know if they're, like, treading water until they are ready to move Mercedes into place, but, like, I don't know.
That does sound like the most plausible explanation, but it's also, like, I hate when they just put something on ice and they're like, we're just going to kind of do the same thing for a while until we're ready for it, and it's always bad.
Jennifer Pepperman, or whatever your name is.
Yeah. Please take care of it.
Please step in. Can I get your attention on that? Thank you.
Because Dynasty is not very far away at this point. So if they're just going to have them wrestle again at the Dynasty pay-per-view, like, what are we doing?
Again, if they can fix what went wrong. The thing is that I want Deonna to go heel. Like, after watching her wrestle at Revolution, I want her to go heel, because I think that, like, she would be much better wrestler if she got to be mean. Like, her vibes in that was like, I'm a cruel wrestler. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize this. So, and like, one of our friends responded to our points from last week about, you know, why we don't understand why Tony's gimmick has anything to do with how badly we were wrestled. And our friend was saying that, you know, she's The thing is that she doesn't wrestle. She hasn't been wrestling as enthusiastically as a heel that when she was a face, she was very bombastic and, you know, full of like explosive energy, and she hasn't been wrestling that way. And I was like, that made me think like, okay, well, is the problem that like Deonna needs to go heel and Tony needs to go face, and that'll magically fix all the wrestling? But kind of feels like maybe that could be a problem, maybe. Like the problem here. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. And I don't feel like Tony's gimmick is one that needs to be a heel gimmick even, you know, like I feel like you could turn the dial in a different direction and send it babyface pretty easily.
Yeah. I think so too. I don't know. I mean, it's nice. It's nice to get into this and, you know, be 20 minutes into the show and be talking about the women.
We haven't talked about a single man except the men who wanted to know Sarah's knowledge. So that's pretty good.
True that. Do you think Britt is ever going to come home?
Why has Britt been gone for so long?
She was spamming Instagram with videos and pictures from, I think she was at like Epcot. And I was like, I was working myself into a little bit of a shoot where I was like, maybe she's trying to trick me. And all of these Instagrams, like these are from another day, and she's trying to pretend that she's not in Boston. And then she's going to show up and challenge Mercedes, and that'll be the first thing. And then she didn't. And I was like, oh, she was just at Disney.
Just at Disney.
Okay.
Well, that's a bummer.
Damn it. Britt, come home. Like, I understand. I don't know. I'm just like, I understand that people got mad at her. I understand that, like, you know, she hasn't always had the best attitude, but I love her. And I love watching her. And I wanted to come back.
She's a great performer, and she'd be fun with Mercedes. I feel like they could have a great feud.
And she's the exact right heel to be going up against Mercedes. Although my only thing is that I think Britt responded to all. She did the MJF thing where, like, everybody was being like, well, Britt doesn't gas her opponents up. So then she was like, okay. And she let Tony, like, book her into the ground, where she just got beat by Chris on Rampage. Not that I'm still bitter about that. So I'm kind of like, well, maybe it's good that she's not Mercedes' first feud, because if her big return was her losing, that would also kind of suck. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I also, you can't book wrestling by thinking all the time about who wins and who loses, because that's when you get into fucking WWE shit. But anyways, so after Mercedes' debut, we cut to the men's title scene, which is messy and ugly and not not fun. So first we had a promo from Samoa Joe where he just basically said, I'm mad and I'm gonna do violence, but a lot of times he doesn't really do promos, so I'm kind of like, he turned in his homework, so good for him. And then after that was absolutely a fucking insane promo from Adam Cole, where he read a dramatized fairy tale about the fierce warrior Wardlow and his battle against Samoa Joe. This led into the Warjo match, which to me was basically indistinguishable from any of the TNT matches last year.
Yeah, it was a real paint-by-numbers Wardlow match. It's interesting because, like, Samoa Joe has managed to interest me at various points in the last couple months, but between the phoned-in promo and then this match, I was just like, Samoa Joe, this is not your best work, and I am happy to blame Wardlow, but like, you're not probably going to have that many defenses, so you should, you know, try a little bit harder.
I know. Maybe. It's like, you've got to, like, he's got to have his, like, the feud that's, like, defining, and I'm like, do you want it to be Swerve taking it off of you? Because but I mean, again, like, it's like, how much can you, like, if I had to feud against Wardlow, I'd suck at it, like,
right?
I don't want to tell you,
it's not giving you anything. It's wild that they even book I mean, it's like, whatever, they've just got to, like, feed some people to Samoa Joe, I guess, but it's just like, having Wardlow fight for the main title at all is just like, why I know.
So Joe won, of course, and Swerve came out of the good boy hole, but he's holding metal chain, and security's like, hey, don't do that. He's hitting security with a chain. Now, I think we have been pretty forgiving of Swerve's face turn, because I think we all want him to succeed and are trying to find ways to get behind him on this. this is, you know how we feel about beating on security.
We are tireless advocates for security rights around here.
And to do it with a chain, I'm like, swerve, we are your fiercest champions. Please. Yeah. You can't be doing this shit.
They should, I mean, really the good boy hole should detect when you've got some sort of nasty weapon.
Do you remember them when the Bucks were faces and they were like the worst faces ever? And I kept saying that like whenever they go through the hole, they should be like, ow, ow, it burns.
They should be playing stuff up like that. Like, I do still, whenever someone's music hits and then they run out, I do think that they have a cat collar, like that one person told us where their
cats had an automated.
I can't remember who said it to us, and it's so funny.
Was that Casual
cats,
Ruffian? Who maybe. Was like, someone messaged us and was like, I think all wrestlers are chipped, and when they run through the hole, that's when like their chip.
Because their cat collar had like a chip that like opened a door for them or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which has just stuck in my head where I'm just always. Like, oh, their chip went through the gate. So
So the music cued. Yeah. I need him to get real with himself. Sort of, like, are you reformed or are you not? Because this kind of behavior won't stand.
Old habits die hard, but leave those security guards alone, you know?
Let me get a promo after where he's like, he goes to what did Allie call it? The aftercare room for boys?
Yeah. Where he's like, Swerve, you weren't going to do it again. Like, oh, man. I promised myself I wasn't going to beat anybody up with chains anymore. Swerve.
That fairy tale thing. So obviously it was insane and the crowd really had a really bemused reaction to it where it was just sort of like, what are we watching now? I would like to say, and I'm going to give you the mic next, but I don't think it was, I think that deranged heel Adam Cole reading dramatized fairy tales could be so fucking funny. It's that he's working with Wardlow, and I don't think that it makes me nervous that it's still in the title thing, but I think the concept of deranged story time is not necessarily a bad one. Let's not throw it out immediately.
Yeah, so I did hate it, but I think you're right that it's like the idea itself in isolation is not necessarily a terrible one. I think the reason it hit terrible for me was like, we had so many, after he got injured, we had so many repetitive pre-tapes where they're doing the same goof over and over and running into the ground that I have like a visceral like, oh no, Adam Cole in a pre-tape reaction, and a visceral like, oh no, Adam Cole at all reaction, and an oh no, Adam Cole like talking about the main titles, and it was like very over the top and cartoony, so that like didn't quite add to it, where I feel like if they had done it slightly differently, it might have hit hard. But if it had been like literally anyone else, I might have liked it. But I think they're just in a position for me where it's like, because they ran MJF and Adam Cole into the ground so hard, is like they really need to do things that are completely different with them to try to avoid my visceral. Because like, I like these guys and I think they're talented, but they need to like stop reminding me of all the stuff that I hated, you know, 3 months ago. And it's like, I've been really loving what the show's been doing for the last, like, since the start of the year. So it's like, please don't make me feel like you're going to drag me back to November 2023.
But don't you think that deranged storytelling is a new thing that he's trying? Like, it wasn't the same, like, I'm in a wheelchair and giving, like, a boring in-ring promo. Like, I think that was him trying to find something new. It's just that like the Wardlow thing. So I said I was going to ask you this. So with the caveat that the answer cannot be fridge him, what would you do with Adam Cole right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because I would just put him on ice for until he's uninjured and then come back for a real storyline. But if you have to have him on screen for God knows what reason. I don't know why these are our constraints. No one else when they're injured.
TK signed a certain deal. And the deal, he gets some things. And he's tied to Adam Cole for good or for ill.
Yeah, it is interesting to think because since you put this in the schedule, I have been thinking about it because it's like, what would I do with him that wouldn't ping me? I think I would try to... disband the United Kingdom in some way. Like, I just feel like we've got to go back to ground. I sort of
just... Anne says, "Fuck the English."
The Undisputed Kingdom. And I mean, the United Kingdom too probably should disband. I mean, I'm not pro-British imperialism, but yeah. So I do think it would be funny to see Adam Cole like doing stuff. Like, I was thinking it would be funny if he had a gimmick where he just went around backstage like being mean to people subtly, like in a psychological war, like walking up to people before their match and being like, "Hey man, good luck out there. Like, you haven't been doing great lately, but I know you're going to do great this time. And I really don't worry about like the one move like that you've screwed it up a bunch of times, but I think this tonight you're going to do amazing at it." And like, honestly, have it like not even be like a dastardly plan. Like, just have him like just has an excess of malice. Like, he's in a wheelchair, like he's injured, he's not having a good time. He had all these plans and the injury really scuttled them. So he's just like backstage trying, just messing with people.
Okay. That rules. Okay. I do like that. That would be extremely funny. I think you're right that like, he really just cannot be the head of a faction is like really the problem, but it is so funny to picture him just being like, "Well, when I do come back, I want there to be a spot available. So I will just subtly wear away at the confidence of the entire roster."
And everyone's just like, "Yeah, talk to Adam Cole. He's a nice guy, I guess.
Do you guys think my ass is getting big?"
He wasn't trying to make me feel bad about it, but I don't feel good right now.
Yeah, that would rule. Absolutely, that would rule. God damn it.
See, I'm great booker. I'm in charge.
If Tony would only unblock us. If he would lift the restraining order, we could tell him some of this. But I don't know. I guess, I mean, they are dropping a lot of hints that MJF is staying part of this whole thing, which is really what scares me. It's like, I like the deranged storyteller, but it's like when you make MJF references and it's Wardlow and you know, like it just makes me so nervous. I guess it would be kind of deranged if MJF came back and didn't acknowledge Adam Cole at all, but
yeah,
I don't know how they dig themselves out of the MJF hole they're in.
Yeah. It is a thing where it's like they should for continuity do it. But on the other hand, like other times they do just drop things. So it's like maybe in this case we should just be like, let's just pretend that never happened and do something else.
Adam Cole did turn on the Bucks and then they never paid that off. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, many things in the Elite storyline were dropped unceremoniously. So I wouldn't hate if that also happened to MJF. Yeah, I feel like I both feel bad for MJF because I feel like he has gotten so much shit online for like how bad things went, even though like I enjoyed a good chunk of his reign. And I think a lot of times people are kind of like it being like, in retrospect, I actually hated it the whole time when it's like, no, you did it. Like, I mean, some people did, but you know, like they're kind of backfilling their opinions. And I do think MJF is, you know, he's like talented and I've enjoyed many things that he's done, but I do have a visceral like, oh no, I don't want to watch him anymore, maybe ever again, which is like not a good feeling because I don't want to throw him out with the bathwater, but I don't know.
I do feel the same way where I'm sort of like, the last, from the moment that Adam Cole got hurt, it was like every moment from then was painful. Yeah. And I'm not eager to have that feeling back where I'm like, dreading what he's going to make me sit through next. But there's so many things I did really like about MJF, both in his reign and before then. Like, I'm like, I don't want to never see him again. Like, I just want him to come back and have like 10 to 20 minutes every other week. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
right. Like, if he had a normal amount of time, which I think he would, because I think like right now, especially with all these debuts and stuff and like Swerve big storyline, like like, it's just, MJF's not going to be in a position where he's getting 30 minutes every single show to just ramble. Yeah. There's no time. So I do, like, talking myself down, it's like, surely there's no way we could go back to that practically. Yeah. So, you know.
I wonder if, like, if Swerve takes the title off Joe in Dynasty, then this Joe Adam Cole, Wardlow, MJF stuff, if MJF comes back after that, that does automatically slot into like a mid-card thing.
And yeah. Honestly, if it did turn into that where it's like Joe and MJF are feuding in the mid-card, like who cares? That's fine.
That's fine. Yeah. Especially if it moves to Collision. Like, sure.
Yeah. I was almost literally about to say that. Like, yeah, if they want to go do that on Saturdays, they can have a half hour on Saturday. No problem.
Oh, yeah. Not a problem.
We can cut a few minutes from FTR if you've got a lot of time. I wouldn't mind Wardlow in that context either, where it's like if they want to do some dumb stuff, not a problem for me.
And then I put this here because of the Adam Cole connection, but Kyle O'Reilly did another promo. This time he started it off. He still had the crazy trauma eyes, but his voice was way different. And he wasn't as haunted when he started it, where he really was like really leaning hard on being the sweetest baby in the entire world to Renee, which was freaking killing me because I was like, liar, liar, liar. Like he said to her, like, I don't know. With the roster, I wonder if I can still hang. And I was like, may God strike you down right in your shoes for
I'm
being
just a little guy.
I'm just a little guy.
Sweet little guy.
Will anybody wrestle me? It was unbelievable. Like, I was like, okay, you are definitely a wolf in sheep's clothing over here. But
it was very funny with that, but still the haunted eyes, where it did make me feel a little bit like, oh, are the haunted eyes not a gimmick? Did you just have a bad couple of years? Like, are those real?
Which is what he was like saying with his mouth, I believe. I can't hold my daughter and I woke up without.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that. Like, he's like, I feel like if he listened to us, he'd be like, guys, I told you what the cannibalism was.
For a wrestler, the horrors are not being able to lift your arms above your head.
He's like, I don't understand why you act like my trauma is a guessing game. It's that I thought I couldn't wrestle again. But then Roddy did turn up on his own. I really did enjoy that Roddy yelled Kyle off stage and Kyle corpsed. He like immediately had to like turn away from Renee to laugh, which I did. I like when they make each other laugh.
That too. Yeah.
So he said that he respects Kyle for wanting to do it on his own. They hugged, and then the Kingdom fist bumped Kyle, and then they left. And then Kyle stood there for an extra minute, and all of a sudden, the terror turned back on. I don't know what he did, but all of a sudden, his soul left his body and he stood there with sightless eyes and said, yeah, this Saturday, gonna do it on my own. And then like the camera lingered for another second and it was just like he was contemplating the things he had to do on his own to get back here from the Northern Territories.
Yeah, yeah.
What is Kyle doing?
It's so funny. I don't know. It really was like just staring in space, seeing the faces of my dead friends who I ate as I was hiking out of the Arctic.
I have to do it on my own.
On my
because
own.
Because I ate everybody who had helped me. Sarah next to me shouted with laughter at that line. which was a deranged reaction. And like, I don't know what other people around us thought, but he said, gonna do it on my own. And she's next to me going, ha!
It is funny. That line actually also made me think of, I think there was like a tweet or something where someone was like, yeah, wrestling's really funny because like two men will be telling you a psychosexual story about why they hate each other and what that means for their sense of self and who they are and their relationship to their father. But they're also like doing a promo for an event. So they're like, and that's why this Saturday at the Yum Arena in Louisville, Kentucky, we'll be fighting at 8 p.m. Get your tickets. And this Saturday, gonna do it on my own.
This Saturday on Collision at 7 Central, I'm gonna relearn who I am. Okay, Kyle. All right. Next up, so Alex Marvez tried to interview the new Elite backstage. Which I think multiple people tagged us to be like, look, it's Alex Marvez. And I was like, you know what? The elite know it's right. That's our guy.
If Alex Marvez can get in there, like, holding the mic weird, like, having a strange energy, that's what we like to see.
That's what we like to see. And this was particularly good because I believe he tried to ask Okada something, and Okada was like, yeah, yeah, I'm going to definitely fight Pac, and that's going to be crazy. Hey, have you wished Matt Jackson a happy birthday yet? Which was so funny because Alex Marvez was just immediately like, happy birthday, Matthew. And Okada was like, no. Sing it.
Okada did great in this. I was like, he's so charismatic. And I was led to believe that his English was worse than it is, but he was doing great.
He was doing fantastic. And I was very pleased with my fellow man in the arena because when the camera cut away from Alex singing, the arena finished singing happy birthday to Matt Jackson, which I hope he heard backstage.
I hope he felt like a special birthday boy.
I very much hope that. So then the match started, which, by the way, I didn't see this because I was on the hard cam side, so I couldn't really see them on the come up from the elevator. But when I watched it back today, Nick almost tripped coming down the stairs.
He almost sure did. Flat on his face. Pretty funny. Yeah. It was pretty, I like that. Pretty obvious. Yeah. I enjoyed it. Yeah. They're wearing those robes too, which are like very weirdly proportioned. So they look kind of like extra, like short, kind of, or like,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It's pretty funny.
As a longtime Bucks thirster after, they're really challenging me in every way.
They're doing everything they can to make you stop it. They're doing
everything they can.
But you say, boys, I have trained with Chuck Taylor for years. You can't do anything to make me stop.
You would not believe the obstacles that I can clear at this point.
We'll still talk about you every week. Don't worry about that.
The match ruled. I thought it ruled.
Yeah, it was so much fun. I was so excited for you when they announced this match for this event because I was like, Leah's going to get him, see him live. And yeah, it was fantastic.
I
had a great time.
I had such a good time during this match that I turned to Sarah and I was like, is this the first time I actually saw the Bucks actually wrestle? And she was like, no. And I was like, well, it feels like I did. And she was like, Leah, you saw Blood and Guts. And I was like,
you saw all in 2021.
Well, that's different. That was a big, that was like a big tag match. And she was like, you went to All Out. And I was like, oh, well, that was a cat cage match. And that was far away. And she was like, you saw them wrestle FTR. And I was like, but I hate FTR.
This is the only Bucks match I've ever liked.
This is the only match. But I thought it ruled. I thought the crowd was mega into it. I thought everybody looked fantastic. Mm-hmm. The way that the Bucks fucking love wrestling the Lucha Brothers, like even just Penta on his
just
own.
Just one brother. Yeah.
They loved it. Loved it.
It was, so much fun. And like Eddie in there worked great too. And you think like Eddie's style is really different from their style, and from Penta's, but it worked great together.
It all meshed very well. And Eddie and Okada ended up being the story. And Okada got the pin. And was this announced later in the show? I don't remember. I don't know if it got announced in the arena that it's going to be Eddie and Okada next week. Yeah. That's pretty exciting.
Very stoked. Yeah.
So the match next week is going to be just for the Continental belt, not for all three. Do you think it makes sense if Okada wins it?
I think he probably will. I feel very like on the one hand, what do I care? Yeah, sure. Take just the Continental belt. On the other hand, I did see someone today being like, but if they break up those three belts, there's so many belts floating around. And I was like, oh God, that's true. Like, we've already got like a too many belt situation. Yeah. So I kind of feel like Okada should maybe just win all three.
One of those belts is not technically ours, right? Like one of them is the New Japan belt. So it would go home.
I think this one's the New Japan one, right? Or no?
No, the Continental one is the only one that's ours because think it's Continental, New Japan. So ROH might end up sticking around again, but at least New Japan would go home, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems fine to me because it was so important that Eddie won it. But to me, like, the Continental Classic is kind of like the Owen where I'm like, it was an event. Like, it's not, it doesn't seem like something that could, should be defended via belt. You know what I mean? I'm like, no, I think in order to have the belt, you should have won the Classic. So if Okada wins it, then I'm just sort of like, okay, well, that's like a little, like, fun, like, toy you gave Okada while he waits his turn, which is fine. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I was forgetting that it is the Connie belt, which does seem like it should just be a trophy you get once a year and not that you defend for sure. So then it's like, well,
I really think that the only person who is a Continental belt holder wins the fucking Continental Classic. Yeah. But it also is sort of to me like, I'm like, well, it's like it was important that Eddie won it. It's not important to me if he loses it like mid-year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
right. Yeah. I don't really care particularly. Yeah, it's interesting, and I am like happy, like I don't think Okada should be in the world title scene right now, like we're too crowded, he's got to have something else to do, and I'm so happy with him being paired up with the Bucks and doing this stuff, like I think it's working so well, so as like a little consolation prize it's fine, but it's like, does he need a belt for a consolation prize? Like he's cool regardless. I don't know. Give him the international belt. Take it away from Roddy, who's doing nothing with it. Orange Cassidy wrestled every goddamn week. Roddy's wrestled like zero times.
When I saw Roddy walk into the screen carrying that belt around his waist, I said, "This is disgusting. This is disgusting." Like, he doesn't even carry it like it's heavy. Like that belt destroyed Orange Cassidy. I almost called the Baron Cassidy. I'm not sure why.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Well, he almost destroyed Aaron, and I don't understand why Roddy is carrying it like it doesn't. It is not the holder of evil. Like,
yeah,
that man it's is changed not
Orange Cassidy's whole personality.
And do we think that Roddy is going to carry it to Mordor? No.
No, he can't. Not. He's not good enough. I know. Orange Cassidy did so much to elevate that belt, and now Roddy is devaluing, bringing it right down, which I don't appreciate.
Yeah. But yeah, so Eddie, I want to see Eddie and Okada fight, and I don't really care too much about the belt part of it, but I do think like that's a very fun first feud for Okada to have.
So fun. Yeah. And I hope it like sends Eddie on a little journey of some kind, you know, like.
Yeah. I mean, it would be interesting for him to slowly lose his belt, because when Kenny did the belt collector, he lost them all pretty quickly, I think. Mm-hmm. Because he needed to take the time off to fix his body. But so if Eddie loses them slowly, it could be like an interesting, like, you know, I've reached the heights and I'm losing it sort of. I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do, but I'm interested to see what he does next. And
it is interesting. And he is like working out a lot in a way that seems like, Eddie might be, there might be some network pressure if he's getting a push to like get looking a certain way, which would be interesting.
Of course, Eddie is beautiful exactly as he is, and he shouldn't change anything if he doesn't want to. But it is interesting to track in terms of like, what are you preparing for?
Exactly.
You know, I want to like, are you getting, you know, we've seen other, like MJF got really swole before his title run. Swerve just got really, really big. So I am interested.
Hangman did.
Mm-hmm. So I'm very interested to be like, Eddie, what does this mean? What are you prepping for? What's
the body stuff? You're the sexiest man alive as you are. So as you are, of course. The only reason I can think of that you would do anything would be for some TV network with some weird standards.
Eddie, so many women would hit that exactly as you are. And men.
Not a lot of
men too.
Yeah. Yep.
We have to move this along. I'm not used to being the cops. also on Big Business, Darby fought Jay White. He came out wearing a hood over a hat with sunglasses, and his face was wrapped with an ace bandage. I thought that he was, from the hard cam side, looking at him sideways, I thought he was wearing a nun's wimple. And I really went through a journey where I was like, wow, like, he is not dealing with Sting leaving well. The man has joined a nunnery. But that was not the case. He was just, he doesn't normally wear that, right? Like, that's new.
Why was it all over his face? It looked like he'd been turned invisible and was having to wear like cloth to like delineate where his body was. Like, I think it is a trauma response to
it. Is I think we're up for some serious pervert shit as he tries to figure out who he is without Sting. Yeah. So also the other thing that cracked me up is that when he finally got in the ring, he did the thing where he sat in the corner like a little boy, which he always does. But then the bell rang and he didn't move. And Jay White turned to Bryce and was like, is he going to fight? What are we doing here? And Bryce was like, Darby, are you going to, what are you doing? Are you going to fight? And Darby was like, fine, I guess. And like got to his feet. And then they did a fight. And I think like, okay, so Darby had taped his ribs. You can't see me, but I'm doing quotation marks because he really just taped his stomach. And then he did like one of the ace bandage crossed over his shoulder. So it just looked like a jaunty tank top. Like with along with like the jorts and the tights, I'm like, yeah. You absolutely like look like an 80s teenage girl to be specific.
Yeah, totally. Now I'm just thinking about the cut to Wardlow that made it look like he was taking a cute little bra off.
That was again one of the few things Wardlow did that was ruled, and it was completely unintentional. Darby could have lost that match like a normal person because he was super banged up. But instead, he did something insane, which was to coffin drop from the top rope onto Jay White, who was laying on the apron. But of course, at the very last second, Jay White moved. Darby hit the apron and then hit the floor he was hitting water from like, 200 feet up. Like the slap of his body.
So dark. It was like sickening, and like on TV, I'm watching the way I watch, which is like I'm in my group chats, I'm like looking at the screen, but I'm looking at other stuff too, and that like really grabbed my attention.
Oh my god! It like I felt like the whole crowd as one jerked back and was like, Jesus Christ, it's crazy. You didn't need to do that.
Yeah.
So I consulted Allie's Cage Side Seats recapper to write this schedule. And I'd like to tell you that Manolo phrased this. So he was going to get counted out. He managed to get up at the last second. And Manolo said he rolled right into Jay White's arms for a Blade Runner. That's very romantic. I liked it.
Sometimes Manolo really, he says some things where I'm like, how am I meant to take that?
So that was a good match. I had a good time. I thought it was fine. And then everything got real weird. So Jay White won cleanly. Like he won, I think he won in a way that I think is underexploited by heels, which is that like, if you just give Darby enough time, he'll do something crazy enough that you can just pin him because he'll hurt himself.
Just roll out of the way and you're all good.
More heels should be like, if I let him, he'll do something so fucked up to himself.
Yeah. And actually commentary was talking up where they were like, Jay White's so smart in the ring, his awareness, like it shows his intelligence that he like let Darby do that to himself, which I thought was good characterization from them.
So the guns come into the ring to celebrate, and Jay White comes over and he leans in to offer Darby his hand. Now, Jay White has kind of been flirting with a little bit of baby facism, like back and forth. So I was like, oh, interesting. But of course, Darby lifts his hand to accept, and immediately all three of them attack him. So they set him up for an ankle break with the chair when all of a sudden the Acclaimed music hits, and the Acclaim come down to save Darby. Bang Bang Scissor Gang all stand in the ring arguing about this, and then the Acclaim grab Darby and help him out of the ring and start going up the ramp. Daddy Ass stays in the ring arguing with Jay White, and all of a sudden Jay White attacks Daddy Ass. The Acclaim drop Darby as if he is a sack of potatoes. They just toss him and go charging back to help save Daddy Ass. Completely fail. The guns start beating everybody. The alliance is clearly completely over. The guns go back for Darby, drag him into the ring, and smash his ankle. And I would like to read to you Manolo's scathing summary. Are you ready for this?
I'd love to hear it.
To be frank, this Super Club story has been terrible, and this turn made it even worse. The purpose of uniting was protection and revenge on the Undisputed Kingdom. That aspect was never addressed for weeks. They meshed well enough without any serious issues. Then, all of a sudden, the Bullet Club Gold are wicked heels on Allen. That wasn't consistent at all to their character work at the last few weeks palling around with the Acclaim. This will likely lead to a trios title showdown, but the road to get there was not good. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, brutal. He's right.
He is right. Yeah, it was so confusing. Like, when they ran out, I was like, what are we... Like, I was like, are they friends with Darby? Like, what's happening? Like, I did go back and rewatch it, and I'm like, I guess it was like... They were like, we're being good guys together. Like, why are you about to be a bad guy? So they were like, Jay, you're better than this. And like kind of tried to help him. But it just, I feel like it didn't make any sense with how these guys have all, like the Bang Bang Scissor Gang has been interacting.
Yeah.
I mean, with the caveat that it's like a lot of it has been on Collision and I don't always watch Collision, but it was so confusing.
I think I have actually watched a lot of what they've been up to, and it did not seem like the, I mean, Jay White has been flirting a little bit with like babyface promos, but the Guns have never flirted with face the entire time. Like they,
it does not seem like it should be surprising behavior that they did this.
No, I thought the Acclaimed were getting dragged heel. And Max Caster's behavior on Twitter really also made it seem like that's what was happening, because I was like, okay, so great. So they're going to turn heel again, which they should, because the Acclaimed have been incredibly boring for a while. And I just don't understand what this is for.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like, it's weird that they teamed up. It's weird that the team up kind of didn't go anywhere. And now they're having like a dramatic breakup. Yeah. But it's like, but why and for what? And I honestly like feel like the whole group of them has been so boring for so long that it's just like, I can't even like analyze what's going wrong, because it's just like, I'm so bored my brain slides off it. Like, I can't even address whatever is happening here.
I think I also a little bit did the thing you're not supposed to do, which is that I read too much into the promo with Jay White and Darby last week. And I had kind of worked myself into a shoot about like Jay White being like, fuck, you're right. Like, I am wasting my time with the Guns. Oh, right. And I am like, I do.
I loved
to,
your
like,
analysis of that.
I know.
One. Yeah,
I thought it was like so good. And then Jay White is like, no, actually,
that's not what we're doing.
Actually, yeah. I'm still just a little idiot. So, okay.
Yeah. Great. All right.
I put in the schedule, is Darby going to climb Everest now? And about 2 minutes
literally
after we hopped onto this Zoom, our rodeo colleague texted us from the back of a stallion and said that Darby will not be climbing Everest, because he actually did break his foot.
He broke his foot for real. Probably in that coffin drop.
Probably in that coffin drop, which is crazy. I mean, like, I don't – like, I – If he broke it in that coffin drop and then they then were like fucking around with the chair, that would have been crazy.
Oh my God.
Could they have accidentally broken it in the chair?
That'd be terrible. Although it would be funny if it was like backstage, people were like, he's going to climb Everest. It's so stupid. Like, he shouldn't climb Everest. And then they were like, we're doing a broken ankle gimmick. Like, what if I accidentally really slam it on the chair?
Tony Khan paid Jay White extra to break Darby's ankle because he's like, the recovery from a broken ankle is shorter than the recovery it's going to take to get him his frozen body off of Everest.
We can't pay to airlift his body off Everest. Yeah.
So he's not
going to
do Everest.
It'd be funnier that the acclaimed dropped him after his ankle was broken.
Oh my God. If that's,
maybe that's
when
what
it broke
it.
That's so fucking funny. I mean, you know, all my best
it's
to Darby's
not,
family.
Yeah, right, but he shouldn't climb Everest.
He shouldn't have.
I was looking at pictures of the line to the top, and I was just like, why would you do this? This isn't even cool. You look like you're trying to get into the Apple store. Like, it's climb a more indie rock mountain. My God.
Now, I'm so interested by this, because climbing Everest with a tour group is a shit ton of money. Like, it costs a lot of
money.
It costs a lot of money to get the permit from, like, Nepal.
Yeah.
Is that where they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that? It's Nepal and China. So. And I think the Nepal side is the one you can get the permits easier.
Right.
Anyways, do you.
But especially
said,
when you're untrained, you need like experienced people to carry you up there, because you don't know what you're doing.
So now in that tweet where Darby announced this, he said, I'm going to have to delay till next year. Do you think that they let him just like.
Oh, just
delay
bump the money.
It? Or is he out the money and has to pay it again? I'd love to know that.
I'd love to know that too. I mean, we know the name of the company, but we can go look at the returns policy. Because they probably saved his spot. So, I mean, he might lose a deposit at least.
So interesting.
That's crazy. I mean, good he's not climbing Everest. Like, be better to the environment. Spend your money on something worthwhile.
There's got to be something, you know, like he's trying so hard to feel something.
Yeah.
I'm like, could you take some of that money and like go to therapy?
Yeah, right.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean it though.
Literally climb Yeah. It is a good suggestion though. Like, sorry you had to hear it, but it is something to think about. There's so many ways to risk your life that don't cost $100,000, I think. So
true. So Ospreay did a short promo about being happy to fight Bryan Danielson, and his drunk girl energy continues to be so endearing.
It was literally like exact drunk girl energy, because he kept talking about, he was like, I'm so happy to be out here looking at this beautiful crowd. I told them I want to go out there with Shivani to talk to the beautiful people from Boston. It's like, if a girl in a drunk girl in a bathroom hasn't told you how beautiful you are, you've simply never been out, you know?
And even him coming down the ramp killed me, because he just skips yeah. out of the tunnel and skips down the ramp, skips into the ring. I also listened to his Talk as Jericho episode this week.
Oh, did you?
And
how was it?
I've got a fever. I've got a fever. The crowd was screaming for him and cheering, and he kept doing this thing that killed me, that he kept looking up at the crowd and just being like, oh, you like me. You really like me. It was very funny. And then he talked about how after he and Omega did the, I don't know why, like, I called him, I think I copied this from somewhere, because since when do I call Kenny Omega?
It's very businesslike.
It was very businesslike. He and I are on first name basis right now. He talked about how after he and Kenny did the Tiger Driver 91, Bryan Danielson said, was it worth it, bro?
Such a Bryan Danielson, just being kind of a stern dad. Like, was that a good idea? Probably it was approving, because
I think his genuine reaction was like, if it was worth it, then it was worth it. If it wasn't, like, Bryan Danielson's like, yeah, you can almost die in the ring if it made you feel something afterwards.
That's
absolutely
the most alive you'll ever feel is trying to die in the ring for sure. Yeah.
Ospreay also brought up the restore the feeling catchphrase, and he bragged, I am the feeling, from the, which got a huge reaction from the crowd. Pretty sure it pissed off Daniel Garcia backstage.
I bet he took it personally. I actually was a little bit like, I mean, it's funny, like, I'm not really holding against Ospreay, but I was a little bit like, okay, buddy, you're not the feeling. Like,
you just got here.
You just got here.
What are your expectations for the match against Danielson? Do you think, like, Ospreay was basically already threatening that one of them is going to die in the ring. Do you think that they're going to make it out?
I sure hope so, but I do think it's a risk that they won't. I mean, it is like Darby going to Everest. It's like, they probably won't die, but also, like, it is a real possibility. Like, they're both sickos, like, crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think it's going to be, like, an insanely good match.
Oh, yeah, I do
think it will not engage me emotionally, probably, although I'm willing. Boys change my mind,
you know? Yeah, I mean, I think our Discord was having a conversation about Bryan Danielson and how he doesn't often emotionally get into things, which is fine. Mm-hmm. And I've been intrigued by how Will Ospreay is kind of attacking AEW in a very interesting way, where he's like, yeah, like, I'm just here to get booked for matches, man. Like, none of these matches are just kind of like a little like athletic exhibition for me. Like, this is not really about like a like blood feud thing. Yeah. And so it'll be, I mean, at some point Ospreay also has, I mean, I'm sure it's going to come whenever he turns on Callous, and then it suddenly is going to get into it. But his vibe about wrestling has been very funny, where he also is a little bit like, I came to wrestle. Like,
yeah, it is interesting now that you're saying it, like, thinking about how their energies will combine. Cause actually also Bryan Danielson, like, usually looks like he's having a good time, and also usually thinks everything out here is kind of funny, you know? This is all like a little comedy sketch we're all doing is the whole thing, and he's not really pretending that he takes any of it very seriously. Yeah. He doesn't do it very well anyway, if he ever tries. So it will be interesting. I feel like they could do something fun if they kind of like lean into those energies where, I don't know, I probably don't want them to do anything that undermines the whole, like, you know, it's not like we're putting on a collaborative athletic event. But it'd be interesting if they were just, like, goofs about it a little bit. I don't know.
It's funny right now. It definitely, they could turn the dial in a bad way where, like, I'm like, okay, but we are watching wrestling for interaction. But, like, for right now, I am, like, very pleased with, you know, how both of them are kind of approaching it. Because it is very, I mean, like, Bryan Danielson is in his era where he's like, I'll wrestle who I'm. who I want to wrestle yeah. because I'll be gone soon and I don't want to have yeah. any regrets. And so it's like, yeah. to me, this is fine. This is, it's going to be, yeah. it's going to be a great match. And I, mm-hmm. I think it would be almost weirder if Bryan Danielson was suddenly like, yeah. I'm here to kill you because one time you insulted me and
right. It's like, you guys shouldn't even try. Cause no. like nothing would make sense as like a no. grudge match type no. thing. So
no,
yeah, just have fun out there. I'll have fun watching you.
Moving us along, Chris Jericho. I want to briefly dip in before we have our final treat topic, but before we get to that, I just need to dip in on what's going on with Chris Jericho. Okay, so last week he gave a promo where he essentially came up to Hook and was like, I saw you across the room. I like your style and I like your dad. Do you want to team with me? And Hook was like, whatever, you know, like, sure. I could not guess if Hook had any feelings about Jericho. Mm-hmm. He just, I think Hook possibly would say yes to anybody who came up and asked him at that
yeah.
point.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then they did that bit, that match last night against, Gates of Agony. The crowd died big time. Mm. It didn't help that he didn't come out to Judas. And I think like people
yeah, were, that was crazy.
Were really resentful about that. And so it was like, whatever. I think I went to the bathroom and got a beer to be yeah. honest.
They were kind of in the dead spot. Like they were in kind of the women's match spot where like people die and the whole episode had been like so stacked at that point. Yeah. Like I do think your energy just kind of dips at a certain point when you've been real high for a long time. But the reactions Jericho has been getting from the crowds lately has been kind good. Of wild. It's been bad.
Well, so
I don't quite understand it either. It feels like an overreaction to me to whatever's happened. Like he's had some mediocre matches and there was the Hausman yeah. thing, but like, I don't know.
I think he also missed. Well, so let me say, so backstage later, like after the match, Jericho came up to Hook again and said he loved teaming with Hook, but he needs to know more. And of course, the only way to know a man is to hit him together. So Hook is going to fight Jericho against in Toronto this week. So I read somewhere, and I think it adds up, that they're building to Hook and Jericho are going to team in the tag team tournament. And yeah. it is, I have been thinking about nonstop I think I brought this up last week too. Trish and Sarah's last episode, Trish said something like Mox read the room and moved into the tag division because he was like, I'm not being fed to any of these newcomers. And right. I think that Jericho is he missed whatever Mox saw coming, and now he's scrambling to do the same. I think he wants out of the...
Well, and he's also, he tried to get there, but like then Kenny got diverticulitis, and then Sammy got suspended. So he's kind of like... He's been caught in a lot of things that were sort of outside his control.
Yeah,
too.
That's true. But I feel like I think that he should have turned heel at some point. Mm-hmm. But, and I don't know that I would have kept trying this tag division thing. I think that it's right that it's like, I think he probably does need to take a break. But like on principle, I don't think it's fair because he didn't do anything wrong. Like people keep blaming him for everything to do with Kenny and Ibushi when it wasn't his fault, and the Houseman thing really was a hit job on him. But I'm also like, at what point are you fighting the crowds? Like at what point are you a Cody where you like the crowds are telling you that they don't want to see you for a while, and what do you do?
And Jericho usually reads the room better than this. I feel like it's very weird to watch him a few weeks in a row getting reactions that he's not, or I don't even know how many weeks it's been. It's maybe been a few months in a row getting bad reactions.
This is so uncharacteristically clumsy for Big J, you know?
And then it does feel like his matches have been worse, and maybe it's just like aging or injuries or whatever, but I almost feel like his confidence is taking some hits.
Oh my God. And do you think that Adam Cole is backstage taking his revenge? Jericho. He's like, our feud went so bad, so I'm psychologically bullying Jericho.
He's like, people still bring up our match as one of the worst ones. of all time in AEW. And so he's like, wow, Jericho, I'm so sorry that that happened with Housman. Are you feeling really bad about it? I mean, I know you didn't do anything.
And you've, I mean, hey, you're the same age as Sting, right? You look as good as Sting.
Yeah, you look great for being Sting's age.
And so, and Jericho's like, he doesn't want to tell Tony he's being bullied. So he's like,
being bullied by Adam Cole would be so demoralizing.
It's so demoralizing. He's like, I'm Big J. I can handle this. He can't handle it. He can't handle it.
No, he can't take it.
Okay, are you ready for our little closing treat?
I'm so excited for our treat.
Best Friends had a match on Rampage, and you watched this. I actually haven't watched this because I was at my parents' house for my dad's birthday, I hear that Dustin was thrilled to be cucked and had the time of his life.
Was so excited to be cucked. He was like, Greg and OC are wrestling. Like, I'm so happy to be here. I haven't seen him this energetic, like this happy. He had a Will Ospreay energy. He's coming down to the ring carrying water bottles. He's like hyping them up. He's slapping the ring. He's having the time of his life. You love to see it, sort of.
love to see it. I had the exact same experience because he's on Rampage this week. And
which I haven't seen.
You haven't seen.
We're recording Friday night before.
We are recording Friday night. And presumably we're going to, well, they main evented, so we have some time. But we're going to get off this Zoom. And I am going to recommend that if you don't watch it tonight, you do end up watching it. It is against the Dark Order. And
I'm so excited.
Dustin had the fucking time of his life. He enjoyed he's giving this energy of like, I have always wanted to be a manager and no one would let me, but this is who I was meant to be. And I'm like, on the one hand, like, I'm never going to see his body again. But on the other hand, when's the last time I've seen him happy?
I mean, if that's the trade-off we have to make, usually we're not seeing him happy or seeing his body. So his body's looking good too. I feel like, Dustin, you could take off the old shirt.
Okay, so I will, like, the same caveats as Eddie, where it's like,
yes,
Eddie, I mean, always beautiful. Dustin looks beautiful. He doesn't need to change a single thing. Mm-mm. But if he it seems as if his body is changing. And if his body is changing and that is one of the reasons for his good mood, then I am very pleased. I'm very pleased.
Yes. It has made me wonder if he is actually training to come back and wrestle. I mean, I know odds are against me, but I am ready to have the football pulled out. But I am like, he's getting in shape. Maybe he's going to come back and do something.
And
Leah, tell me that's what's going to happen. Leah, tell me. Tell me that's what's
gonna happen. I have this bridge I wanted to see if you were maybe interested.
Yes, I would love to buy it. Yeah. Absolutely. I've been looking for a bridge. It's so good you came to me with this opportunity.
How many times have we said, I think this is it. We're going to see Dustin wrestle again. And then he says, no.
It's like, oh, this ankle still hurts.
But maybe. The match ruled. It ruled.
I'm so excited.
Then the...
Yeah, you guys weren't even going to stay for Rampage
because
you had to go to work early. And then you stayed for like the whole goddamn thing.
We were self-congratulatory being like, we are not staying for Rampage. No one can make us stay for Rampage. We're leaving. And then they announced that OC and Greg were going to have a match. And we said, all right, we'll stay long enough to see if they open. If they're not opening, we're leaving. And then the opening match... It was ended up being good, and I was like, I kind of want to see this. And so we were like, yeah, so we'll watch it. And so then we just kept Dread Pirate Robertsing ourselves, where we were like, after this match, we're leaving. Totally. And then it was like, okay, so we're here for Rampage. And then, of course, so the episode ends, and Swerve's music hits. And so Swerve and Nana come out, and we're like, is Swerve going to do the go-home speech? But Best Friends stay in the ring. Swerve and Nana get in the ring, and Nana grabs the mic, and he says, I think that the Best Friends should do the dance. Immediately, Greg is like, thank you so much for asking me. I have always wanted to be asked. I'm thrilled to do so. Do you ever think about how happy our lives would be if we were Greg girls?
Like, he gives so much.
He gives
He's
so
just
much.
Being hilarious and delightful all the time.
He's
wrestling.
On Twitter.
He likes
he
to
is
wrestle.
On TV. He is on Instagram.
He's on Twitter talking about things that aren't basketball even.
Oh my God. The life of a great crazy girl is well fed. Meanwhile, he does that. Orange Cassidy's in character, so he's doing the, like,
extremely and Orange Cassidy, shoot, loves to dance, so I was shoot like, it's probably killing him that he's not doing the full but dance. I mean, he did a great OC version of the dance. Of course, I've seen 500 videos of it on Twitter already, so,
I don't know why I thought you weren't going to in the moment. So I was texting you guys from the show, and I was like, this is happening, and you were like, oh my God, tell me everything. And I was like, no, I'm going to tell you on the pod. Because in my mind, this was a secret between the best friends in the city of Boston, and then I would be able to explain to you what happened in a play-by-play and get your reaction. And then about 25 seconds after it happened, it became incredibly clear that there would be, of course, 47 videos.
Well, of course, when he said it to me, I was like, oh, I can't wait. And then I saw the first video of it on Twitter, and I was like, oh, Leah's going to tell me this about this, though, so I shouldn't watch it. Then I was like, I just won't tell her. And I watched, and then I watched five other ones, and then I was like, I'll probably tell her, though. I'll probably tell her I saw it.
I don't know it's why it didn't occur to me that there would be any way that you could. Like, I genuinely was like, and she won't have access to this because Dynamite isn't filming it.
But describe what Dustin did. Yeah.
Right. So OC does the dance, but he's doing it in character, you know, very lethargically. Dustin makes a feint like he's going to do it. And he, like, steps forward, and then he goes, nah. And he, like,
bats. He does a nah hand. Yeah. Oh, I'm just kidding.
Bats away Nana and turns away. The entire, like, my section starts chanting for him. Chanting. Mm. The Chuck E. Cheese chant got started loud. I think that people close to him also were doing that.
Yeah.
Because then he leaned down and pointed to his ankle as the reason why he couldn't dance, even though half of the stupid Nana dance is with your arms.
Yeah, I don't think you really have to move your legs much at all with the Nana dance. Plus, he's out there walking around on it. Like, he can do a little two-step. Please.
He lives to frustrate me. And he's lucky he's looking so attractive right now.
I know. It's crazy he entered a performing arts career when he doesn't enjoy people looking at him. Like, you watch OC, because OC did a different, he did the Angelico and Helico dance with them after, like, I saw a video of that, and he was, OC was, like, going crazy doing it. I was like, this man loves to dance because he loves people to look at him, and he just chose a gimmick that is, like, less of a dancing guy, but no, Dustin just laughed watching him do it and didn't do any of it.
Didn't do any of it. Incredibly infuriating. And, I mean, he, like, you can tell that his body is slimmed down, but it is absolutely in character that he could have a six-pack right now, and we'd have no idea because he's so freaking committed to the baggy jumpsuits.
He loves those tracksuits so much. Like, he must have, like, 100 of them in his closet. New one every week. These ones were cute. I liked them.
They were cute. I did like them, but... Oh my God. Anne, do you have anything else you'd like to add that we didn't cover?
You did such a good job hosting.
Oh my God, thank you so much. I was going to make you do this as soon as we finished recording, but I'm glad to hear it now.
My pleasure. Did I do a good job being the only person to answer questions?
You were the star pupil. You did.
Thank you so much.
Amazing.
Thank you so much.
Wow. And I think the listeners are going to tell us what a good job we did.
I think they'll understand the energy that we have and the kind of reassurance that we need after doing a two-legged stool podcast. So guys, come into the Tunnel Talk, the Social Suplex Network podcast Discord, and come to the Tunnel Talk channel and just, you know, give us an unbiased review.
Tell us we're good girls.
Yeah.
Not unbiased. I need you to I need you to lie to us. Even if
unbiased
this,
wink.
Even if this episode sucked ass, I think you need to tell us what a good job we did.
That's right. So we can bring ourselves back next week.
All right. Well, I've been Leah.
I've been Anne.
And I've been Leah. That's the order.
Excellent.
And this is Tunnel Talk. Our theme is by Chris Corkin. You can find us on Twitter and Tumblr at Tunnel Talk Pod and via email at tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find us, as Anne mentioned, on the Social Suplex Network feed, where you can check out some of the other Greek podcasts on the network. And as always, please come back next week.